wasabi wallet and fairly private.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. I hope you're having a good day. Lots of interesting stuff going on this week. We got some stuff, some news out of Paraguay. Sorry, bad pronunciation here. Regarding following the example of El Salvador and working on a bill to potentially get Bitcoin as legal tender in the country. But it's not so cut and dry. We're going to get into some of the details of that and what it entails and how likely it might be, and lots of other stuff to touch on. Just before I came online, Robert Breedlove dropped a blog post regarding the whole BitClout deal. So that's why I was a little late getting in here. I was trying to sort through that quickly before we dove on. Anyways, we're going to touch on it. As always, of course, make sure you smash that like button, give this a share. Let's get a ton of people in here. Let's talk about what's going on. Get those chat messages coming in. As always, this is live. Anything can happen. So I defer to my good friend Bill here.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get this thing rolling. Everybody that's here, thank you for being here. Smash like, give this a share. And as always, I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. This is your daily session.
Hodl the Bitcoin.
All right, before we dive into the show, of course, let's take a look at where we are in the markets right now. We're sitting at $34,812 per Bitcoin. A single US dollar will grab you 2,873 sats. 89.25% of all Bitcoin have been mined. And in terms of fees, for the next block, 21 sats per byte will do you. If you're willing to wait an hour, 4 sats per byte. So still relatively cheap fees despite the bump in price. Now, we did bottom out just the other day. We did go below 30K for a while. We dove into the $29,000 range in that area. And some people were biting their nails. Other people were saying, great. Cheap sats. You know, if you've been here a while, you're used to this kind of stuff. It can be crazy at times. But we've bounced back since then. Of course, we had Peter Schiff call the bottom. He said it's going to zero. Obviously, he said, oh, head and shoulders, we're heading down, and this puts us straight to zero. That's it. As if he's never called that in the past 12 years, multiple times at much lower price points. But hey, Schiff gonna Schiff, and we're still here. So before we dive into the news, of course, shout out to sponsor the show, Ledin.io. You can use your Bitcoin here for a variety of different services. Of course, they've got their Bitcoin back loans. If you are in a pinch and you need dollars and you don't want to sell your Bitcoin, which is an awful thing to do, you can deposit here and get dollars as a loan to your bank account within 24 hours. And then when you pay back that loan, you get back the same amount of Bitcoin. So if you're worried about, that's a taxable event and worried about maybe having to buy back it at a higher price, this could be an option for you. Of course, they have their savings accounts for Bitcoin and USDC, interest rates of up to 11% annually paid monthly, and their B2X offering uses the same loan mechanism to instantly buy you more Bitcoin. Check them out. Links below if you opt to get a loan. They'll give you $25 for free into your savings. Keystone. Now, I just did an interview with Li Shin, formerly of Kobo Vault. I'm going to be posting that in the coming days. He's talking all about this shift from Kobo to Keystone, what exactly went down there with the former company, which he was under their umbrella, so on and so forth. Very, very interesting, but I'm very glad they're continuing their work with the Kobo, now Keystone wallet. And I just got the device myself, so I'm going to be testing it. Very, very similar to the Kobo. All of the great features that you're used to, with a few upgrades. The SD cards on the outside now, of course, they still have the secure element, Bitcoin-only firmware. They've got all the great stuff, air gapping, and it works with all my favorite wallets. Sparrow just updated to work with Keystone. You got Blue Wallet with their new release. all the great stuff there. So be sure to check them out. Links are below if you're looking at that. Now, if you're in Canada, you're looking to buy Bitcoin, of course, if security and ease of use are top of mind, you got to check out BitBuy. These guys have been doing yearly proof of reserve audits. They were the first in Canada to do so. They're the only guys in Canada that have full one-to-one insurance with any Bitcoin that is in their custody. So if you're a person that likes to kind of build up a little bit and then kind of withdraw in tranches, then this is a great option because you know there's that one-to-one insurance sitting there. Of course, they've got their web interface, which is super easy, but they've also got a dedicated app you can get on your phone to stack sats on the go. After your first $20 purchase, or sorry, $250 purchase, you get $20 for free. Now, I live on Bitcoin. One of the ways I do this that really helps is BitRefill. I can get any damn gift card I imagine in tons of different countries, and it's super easy. I can pay Mainchain and Lightning Network, and I earn sats back as I shop. So I love it there. Check out BitRefill. Links are below. And finally, you guys know this. If you're backing up a wallet, paper isn't exactly the best way to do it. Fire damage, water damage, somebody, maybe a relative, accidentally discarding it if you're not careful. Solid steel is the way to go. This is how I back up my important Bitcoin wallet. So check out the Bill Foddle over on privacypros.io. Solid steel. That definitely insulates you from all of the terrible instances I just outlined. But with that said, let's dive into the news. Let's talk about Paraguay here. Because after El Salvador announced that it was looking at adding Bitcoin as a legal tender and then subsequently passed that bill, which will come into effect about 2.5 months from now, I believe, give or take a few days, but it's coming. It's around the bend. So it's officially been passed. It's happening. And there's a 90-day window from the moment it was passed to when it actually comes into effect. So a lot of countries started looking at that, particularly in Central and South America, saying, hey, we kind of want to jump on this train. And it looks like the first to at least propose it and get a bill to be voted on after El Salvador will be Paraguay. Now, how likely is this to happen, though? So let's dig a little bit deeper here, because it's nice to see this pop up and nice to see the interest, but is it likely? So I'm going to read a little bit here from Euronews. It says that lawmaker Carlos Rahala is now leading a bid to implement legislation to make Paraguay the second country to add Bitcoin as legal tender. On Thursday, he announced on Twitter he would be introducing a bill to the country's National Congress in July that would likely mirror El Salvador's new cryptocurrency law. So he said, in July, we legislate. Now, the interesting thing is, how likely is this? So they say the devil's in the details. Bulk of the details of the bill have not been widely circulated yet. He says, this guy, Rahala, says he is outlining his vision for Bitcoin use in Paraguay, saying that he was working with the Paraguayan crypto community in order for Paraguay to become a hub for the crypto investors of the world and subsequently be placed among the ones of the cutting edge of digital technology. Now, he is not a higher up in the legislature here. Let's be clear. So he is, they have an 80-seat chamber of deputies, and he is representing the, I'm not sure how to say it, Hagamos party. And his party only has 2 seats of that 80-seat chamber. To put this in context, in El Salvador, Bukele and his party have basically a sweeping majority of everything. They won the bill to pass Bitcoin as legal tender by like 64 votes in, again, an 80-seat chamber, I believe. And so when you're looking at this, or actually they might have a few more seats in El Salvador. So I'm mistaken there, but they almost had 3/4 of the vote. They definitely had more than 2/3. Whereas this, such a small party proposing this, I don't know if this is going to get through unless there just happens to be a swell of support. But this guy is in a small party. He's bound to get some opposition from, you know, a good chunk of people outside of his party. So I don't know. I feel like we shouldn't get too excited about this. Again, it's nice to see the interest, but I'm not banking on this passing. Furthermore, if you really look into some of the language that he's talking about, it seems to be around just like a general, let's get every cryptocurrency in the door. It's not like, hey, let's really help our people with Bitcoin and make it a legal tender. It's like, hey, we're going to be extending an invitation to kind of everyone. And he seems to be going down a little bit of the shitcoin rabbit hole. But when you see who's kind of behind him and helping him out, they had one of the CEOs of Bitcoin.com, CEO of crypto exchange Bitcoin.com.py. I imagine their Paraguayan version of the website. He's collaborating with a congressman to introduce a project in Congress so that Paraguay becomes crypto-friendly, quote-unquote, for worldwide crypto investors. And so it's no wonder that he's kind of using the type of language that Bitcoiners tend to say, where are you going with this? Because Bitcoin.com obviously was originally bought by Roger Ver, not originally, but under the ownership of Roger Ver, and that website very much has pumped Bitcoin Cash in replace of Bitcoin for years. So obviously they're going to be pushing like the more crypto outlook on things, as opposed to, hey, let's make Bitcoin legal tender, let's push for a Bitcoin standard, let's utilize the Lightning Network, and let's focus on making a cohesive infrastructure for everyone so that it's just easy to transact as they see fit. And that doesn't seem to be the way that they're going. But hey, you know, we'll see. Again, I'm not super hopeful about this particular legislation, but seeing the interest around the globe and in this region, regardless, is at least encouraging. The game theory here is playing out pretty nicely. So Miami obviously became a big focal point with Bitcoin 2021. The conference was massive. Tons of people went to it. And the mayor, Suarez, has talked about paying city employees in Bitcoin, accepting Bitcoin for taxes, holding it on the balance sheet of the municipality. A lot of buzz there around this. And the Democratic frontrunner for New York says he will turn the city into a Bitcoin hub to rival Miami. So some of his quotes here, he said, I promise you, in 1 year, you're going to see a different city. We're going to become a center of life science, the center of cybersecurity, the center of self-driving cars, drones, the center of Bitcoin. We're going to be the center of all technology. And he later went on to say, Miami, you had your run. We're bringing our business back, directly kind of pulling a shot at Miami and saying, hey, we're going to compete with you for this. So, it's interesting to kind of see this playing out both on like a country level and a municipal level. We're seeing it play out in states as different states pass favorable regulations for Bitcoin miners. You had Kentucky have reduced taxes for anybody that's mining in the area. You have Wyoming trying to pass, well, actually successfully passing a ton of legislation in and around cryptocurrency and, well, I mean, namely Bitcoin, to encourage business to come and domicile there. So yeah, the game theory is really starting to get rolling here. You know, it's not all going to happen at once, but had you taken just this handful of stories and brought them back to 2017, people would have lost their minds. Encouraging to see. And then just another thing to add to here, banking giant BBVA launches Bitcoin trading custody services in Switzerland. So the Madrid-based financial services giant BBVA is one of the largest financial institutions in the world, and they will soon be offering Bitcoin trading and custody services through its Swiss subsidiary. Their quote here, after 6 months of testing with selected groups of users, BBVA Switzerland makes its first crypto asset trading and custody service available to all of its private banking clients. And this is according to an announcement from the bank's office. The service will be limited to Switzerland and is scheduled to begin operating on June 21st. So that was, you know, earlier this week. This story was from the 18th, but still worth bringing up. A Bitcoin management system will be integrated into a BBV Switzerland app where performance can be viewed alongside other investments. So again, we're kind of seeing this rollout where, and we've seen testimonials from banks saying, hey, we're losing business. We're seeing money flow out the doors to the exchanges. We want them back. So we better start offering these services. Otherwise they're going to eat our lunch. You know, I highly encourage all of you to do your own self-custody and not be trading. But hey, these banks are trying to compete. They see a lot of people that are pulling money out the door and they don't like it. So rather than trying to ban it at this point, I think they're just going to play ball. So, yeah. Okay, now let's get into this China mining FUD that's going on. So China, first of all, let's address the previous FUD around China. What was it before? China controls Bitcoin. Too much of the hash rate is in China. China's destroying the planet because all of the mining is there. They can control Bitcoin. They could shut it down. They could do whatever. It was always China controls it too much. And there was so much worry around that. There was a lot of FUD around the environmental aspect of it. Oh, it's horrible for the environment. Funny enough, China, it was primarily hydro. Sure, there was some coal involved, but a lot of it was hydro in China. Anyways, they started cracking down on mining recently. They used the excuse of carbon footprint, but again, they're now going to basically all of the hydro and shutting down those mining operations as well. So it seems to be just like a sweeping ban of mining in China. Now, the worry was China controls Bitcoin, right? But if China is banning Bitcoin, then that obviously does not seem to be the case. If they controlled it, then they wouldn't try to ban it because they could just control it. So clearly they can't control it. So now they're trying to ban it. But the FUD around this now is, oh, if China's going to ban it, then Bitcoin's going to die because China's going to get whatever it wants. But that's not how Bitcoin works. If the hash rate drops, there's a difficulty adjustment. The same amount of Bitcoin will be mined every 10 minutes after that difficulty adjustment hits, which is roughly every 2 weeks. The upcoming difficulty adjustment should be around July 1st. So in about a week now, actually, we can check that right now. We are looking at sooner, June 29th, estimated retarget date. And we're looking at an estimated difficulty change of around down almost 21%. So it'll be 21% easier to mine Bitcoin because currently with the amount of hash rate that has pulled offline, it's that takes that much longer to mine Bitcoin. So what are the implications of this? What's going on? Basically, the hash rate has been chopped in half for a lot of these miners. You can see the change in hash rate from like Ant Pool, F2 Pool, Huobi. I never know how to say that one. Anyways, they're down like 82%, one terahash, down 97%. So a bunch of the smaller operations are basically going totally down and they're going to have to take their miners to different locales. And meanwhile, the ones that are still mining, they're going to be making bank, right? Because all of the same mining rewards are now just divvied up amongst the remaining hash, amongst the remaining miners. So they just get a bigger piece of the pie for the time being until those rigs are relocated and then come back online. So we're going to see some massive drops in hash rate, which is totally fine. And then it'll retarget. Everything will be back to normal. And then we'll see as those machines find new homes, huge increases in hash rate yet again. And you'll see quicker blocks when that's happening instead of slower blocks right now. Right now, transactions will probably take a little bit longer than they would have. Transactions might be a little bit more expensive than they would have. But you'll see exactly the opposite when these come back online. So yeah, it's very interesting to see, again, at about 65% of the world's Bitcoin mining took place in China as of April 2020. And over months, that dominance has been fading. Market participants in at the time in China, they have less than 50% of the share of Bitcoin hash rate and falling. With the latest crackdown, share has been further declining. Bitcoin price plunge in recent weeks and other are another major reason for hash rate fall. According to data compiled by The Block, most Chinese Bitcoin mining pools now have seen their hash rate fall by over 50%. However, North American miners like Foundry have seen hash rate increase. In fact, Foundry is up about 15% during the same period. So you're going to see this mass relocation of mining hash rate, and it'll just be further decentralized because of this legislation, which is super funny to see. All of a sudden, all of the FUD around China controls Bitcoin, China's banning Bitcoin. I saw a tweet earlier. How many people have money on the sidelines looking at the China FUD right now, saying there's all these threats from China, and all they're going to see is China bans Bitcoin, nobody is mining Bitcoin in China anymore, and Bitcoin still functions exactly as intended. Nothing will change. It will continue, it will retarget, and it will just keep pumping out blocks roughly every 10 minutes. All of a sudden, that FUD is gone. We're in the midst of that being worked through the public psyche right now, or anybody that's paying attention. So very interesting. Somebody who doesn't get it is Jim Cramer. Jesus Christ. Come on, Jim. Jim Cramer from Mad Money. He bought in a while back when Anthony Pompliano had him on the show and explained it to him. He bought in, then he sold like half of it to buy a house. And then he dumped almost all of it recently because of the China stuff. And he was saying like, well, China always gets what it wants and they're going to come in. And there, he doesn't seem to understand in the segment here. He's talking on air and he's saying there's less people mining it. So why would the price go down if there's less Bitcoin being mined? There's never less Bitcoin being mined within a 4-year epoch. There's the same amount of Bitcoin always being mined within the 4 years until the issuance gets cut. So Bitcoin, upon inception, 50 Bitcoin were mined every 10 minutes. And then that number gets cut in half every 4 years. Right now, 6.25 Bitcoin get mined every 10 minutes, regardless of how many people are mining it. This is one of the innovations of Bitcoin. Digital scarcity. It doesn't matter if the mining capacity quadrupled or 10x'd overnight. You would have a period of a short period of time, less than 2 weeks, and it would retarget, and you would have 10 minutes every time the same amount of Bitcoin being issued. Conversely, if 90% of the hash rate dropped off the network, and there's only 10% left mining Bitcoin, you'd have slow blocks for a while. And then when it retargeted, it would be right back to every 10 minutes, the same amount of Bitcoin issued. So Jim Cramer, unsurprisingly, doesn't understand Bitcoin. And I think it's going to be super hilarious watching him look at this through later this year as he realized that he dumped in and around like $30,000 and it was on FUD that has been recycled for years. We've been hearing this shit since 2014 and earlier. I guess people just really don't look at what they're buying. It is what it is. More FUD coming out from the Bank for International Settlements. So the world's central banks launched new campaign against cryptocurrencies. Surprising. Who would have thought that they are not fans of Bitcoin? So central bank owned Bank of International Settlements says cryptocurrencies work against the public good. this drivel from the CVC is Don Pittis, dude, you gotta look into this more. Like, did they just send you like a press release and you just copied it and put it into an article? Because this article, I challenge any of you to read through this and not have your blood pressure go through the roof, because it is astounding how much is wrong with this article. Anyways, it's basically like a marketing shtick and a smear campaign against Bitcoin while pumping the benefits of their central bank digital currencies. They go through everything, the volatility, one of the things that they talk about, and you got to hear this, they say innovations such as cryptocurrencies, stablecoins, and walled garden ecosystems of big techs all tend to work against the public good element that underpins the payment system. They say that walled systems are a bit like Canadian Tire money, effectively chits that you can only spend in-house. They say central bank issued digital money, called CBDCs for short, an area where China has become world leader, because we all want to follow that example, was first seriously mooted after Facebook proposed its own stablecoin. Unlike cryptocurrencies, which can rise and fall unpredictably, the value of CBDCs are known. And unlike stablecoins, they can be spent anywhere as legal tender. They're known, and they're known that they will continue to decline in purchasing power in perpetuity forever. Anyways, as described Wednesday by BIS Research Director, Korean economist Hyun Song Shin, central bank digital coins would have many advantages of crypto without the disadvantages. And then they said, you could pay someone just as you would handing over cash, but do so digitally using your smartphone. CBDCs are a claim on the central bank, which means the payment is certain and final without leaving things to intermediaries to complete the transaction. What the fuck are they talking about? There are no intermediaries in Bitcoin. It's peer-to-peer. That's the whole premise of it. I do get it because they're just talking out their asses. They are trying to paint it as, well, these things are scary and they're trying to hurt you. You need to come under the umbrella of us so that we can control your money and we will be the ones that have security for you. They talk about better privacy, even though, like, surely you would have to register your name and identity with a central bank digital currency to use the wallet, at which point their database of who owns what would eventually be subject to somebody finding your information, right? Like, do they really think that information will never be leaked? I mean, we've had major leaks of financial data from major companies that are supposed to protect that for the globe. Like, most of the tax base in the US was leaked just like a year or two, all of their social insurance numbers and everything. It was insane. Anyways, I don't know how much time I can spend on this article. It's horrible. It's bad. It's incorrect on so many things. I challenge you to read it and not throw your computer through a wall. It's bad. But they talk about the public good in this. They talk about working that the central banks are working in your best interests. And here's a great example of working in your best interests. Christine Lagarde, this from the European Central Bank, negative interest rates have often been criticized because of their potential side effects. Our assessment continues to be positive as the benefits outweigh the costs. The benefits outweigh the continued costs. What do you think about that? Negative interest rates. What does that mean? That means when you have your money deposited with a financial entity, there's a good chance that they're scraping a little bit of it away the longer you don't spend it. Does that sound like a good deal? Does that sound like it's in the interests of the public good? It sure as fuck doesn't to me. And in a world of central bank digital currencies, they can enact negative interest rates directly into your wallet. So the insulation you would get of like just pulling your money out of a bank and holding it as cash yourself would no longer be there if everything is digitized. They can just say, well, you haven't spent any money in a while, so we're going to start chipping away at that and taking our cut so that you go and spend like a good little consumer. I don't want that. And so luckily, we have something that allows us to just opt out of this narrative and this assessment of the benefits of negative interest rates, because it sure as fuck doesn't benefit me. And I'm willing to bet it's not going to benefit you. So you do have the choice to opt out now. Let's get into some more positive stuff here. I'm interested to see. I hope this is something good. There's a new event happening called the B Word. And so this is July 21st, coming up next month. And so it is, the B Word is a Bitcoin-focused initiative that aims to demystify and destigmatize mainstream narratives about Bitcoin, explain how institutions can and should embrace it, and raise awareness around areas of the network that need support. The B Word will launch on July 21st, 2021, offering a live experience and a library of content to the investor community, enabling a more informed discussion about the role Bitcoin can serve for institutions across the globe. And this is going to be put on by Cathie Wood, founder and CEO of ARK Invest, Jack Dorsey from Square and Twitter, Adam Back, co-founder and CEO of Blockstream, also cited in the Bitcoin white paper, Michael Morrill, senior counsel at Beacon Global Strategies, and John Newberry, director of Brink. So I'm very hopeful for this. I'm glad that there's initiatives like this to cut through the bullshit that you see in the news that is just so ill-informed. And I wish them all the best. I'll be trying to tune into some of this to see some of it. But some of the things they're covering: demystifying Bitcoin, supporting the developer ecosystem, securing the Bitcoin network, regulating Bitcoin, preserving the Bitcoin ethos. And there's a live session called Bitcoin as a Tool for Economic Empowerment. So let's hope for the best. Yeah. And I also like that it's entirely Bitcoin focused. So kudos to them. We'll see how it plays out. And Cathie Wood, she's also, you know, she's got skin in the game. She's not just walking the walk. She's talking the talk and walking the walk. Cathie Wood's ARK ETFs loaded up on Coinbase, which and Grayscale Bitcoin Trust as the price was collapsing. So the ARK ETF loaded up on investments as Bitcoin fell below $30,000 just yesterday, or actually rather on Tuesday. They bought over 1 million shares of the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust and 214,000 shares of Coinbase. And she's sticking to her long-term price target of 500K. Hats off. Yeah, I mean, that's ballsy. Good for her. She stacked a bunch of sats. I know it's through Grayscale, but there's something that makes sense there. I'm going to show on just a brief mention, because this always happens, but MicroStrategy, of course, acquires more Bitcoin. They now hold over 105,000 Bitcoin in total. They picked up another 13,005 Bitcoin for around $489 million in cash. This is as of June 21st. Average price so far of their holdings is $37,617 per Bitcoin. That was their last purchase that they made. Right now, the average purchase price of all their Bitcoin is around 26K. So they're still doing well in that context. But let's talk about GBTC, Grayscale. So these guys hold an insane amount of Bitcoin. About 3% of all existing Bitcoin are stuck in this fund. And it's like a black hole. When it sucks up Bitcoin, it's just in there. They issue shares based on the amount of Bitcoin that they hold. Okay. And those shares, based on demand for them, can be at a premium or a discount to the price of Bitcoin. So the Bitcoin that each share represents can actually be worth more or less than the price that the share was bought at. Okay. So for a while, the Bitcoin that was going through Grayscale, through their investment trust, was at a massive premium. So people would buy that up and then be waiting on the price to be able to unload that. But basically, there wasn't a lot of on-ramps to purchase Bitcoin. So Grayscale, people would be buying at a premium. Well, now it's at a discount because there's other vehicles that you can invest in Bitcoin through that weren't at a premium. Now it's at a massive discount. And when I say massive discount, I mean like 10 to 20% below the price of regular Bitcoin. Yeah. So they're trading at a 10 to 20% discount to NAV. All right. So when people originally bought Bitcoin through Grayscale, it got locked up for like a 6-month period. And a lot of those are now being unlocked and presumably some of them sold onto the market, right? Because they were locked up. Somebody probably has made a pretty penny or they just don't want the risk anymore. They don't want the volatility and maybe they're unloading some of those shares. Well, if it's at a discount, then that seems pretty attractive to somebody saying like, you know, I can pick up Bitcoin that's technically trading 10 to 20% low, below the actual price of Bitcoin. And so a lot of people, a lot of investment firms are looking at this saying, well, we could buy spot price Bitcoin on an exchange and self-custody it, or we could get exposure through Grayscale and start buying up some of these unlocked shares of GBTC that are starting to come onto the market. And so this is actually soaking up a lot of spot price demand that would have been seen on exchanges. A lot of them are now going through GBTC. And so a lot of these are continuing to be soaked up, but there's still a lot more Bitcoin to be unlocked through Grayscale. So the demand on the regular market, on the spot market, may be kind of muted because a lot of that capital is going to go into Grayscale in the meantime, as people pick up these discounted Bitcoins for the time being. So that hopefully gives you a little bit of insight as to why the price is kind of, you know, stayed low and ranged in this like $30,000 and $40,000 range. A lot of GBTC shares are coming onto the market being unlocked and they're at a massive discount and a lot of people are buying that instead of actual Bitcoin. Now, I know myself, obviously, I would want the actual Bitcoin. I would want self-custody, but institutions don't always think that way, right? So to them, it makes sense. They want exposure and that's what they're doing. So I imagine all of this discounted Bitcoin through GBTC will be soaked up over time. And once that happens, then you'll see some movement, but we still got some ways to go over the next 2 months. It says the equivalent of 82,000 Bitcoin worth, almost 83,000 Bitcoin worth of GBTC shares are being unlocked. And as long as GBTC continues to trade at a discount to NAV, which should be expected, lots of Bitcoin demand will go towards Grayscale, which won't be reflected in the Bitcoin price. Okay. So just keep that in mind that, you know, just ride it out the next couple of months here. I'm fine. I'm just continuing to accumulate. I'm happy with it. Now, a sad note, John McAfee, he was pretty prolific. He was a wild guy, but he has died. He was in a Spanish prison. He was on the run from U.S. authorities. He was arrested while on the run, put in a Spanish prison in Barcelona, I believe. And he apparently died by committing suicide. He was just approved to be extradited to the United States. And within hours of that, he was found dead in his cell. Now, I don't want to speculate too much on what's going on there, but he was all over the place in especially like the 2017 bull run. He was tweeting all kinds of crazy stuff. He had like a coin of the week. He would get paid for tweets and stuff like that. He was kind of in the Bitcoin camp for a while, but then he wandered over into like the Bitcoin Cash camp and did a lot of, you know, questionable things. Regardless, I don't think it should be anybody's fate to end up dead because a country chases you around the globe wanting their cut of your money. So it's unfortunate to see that. Also, there's been a lot of speculation around this online, but he did tweet multiple times that he was content and that he would never kill himself. One of his tweets, "I am content here. I have friends. The food is good. All is well. Know that if I hang myself a la Epstein, it will be no fault of mine. This was October 15th of last year. Could things have changed for him over the past 9 months? Possibly. I mean, I've got to imagine not having your freedom does a number on you. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I won't speculate too much more. Take it for what it is. A little warning to you guys. If you have a ledger, I know I do. And if you did not use a PO box when purchasing it, or if you've used your full name and address, you've probably been subject to some type of phishing emails, things like that. Well, some scammers are stepping up their game because previously there was a hack of Ledger's online store and everybody's data got leaked effectively. Home addresses, all of that information, emails. Well, these guys are getting pretty sophisticated because they're mailing people Ledger products that have been repackaged, that have been tampered with, that are effectively, they take out the inner workings of the Ledger and they instead insert what's basically just like a thumb drive that is meant to look like that is meant to look like a Ledger. And then they get you to input, to create a seed and then input it. And that can, communicates that information back to them, at which point they take control of the seed. They wait for money to be added to the account and then they sweep the wallets. So these have been going out to the leaked list of Ledger customers, basically saying like, hey, we had a problem here. It says, let me read from the email here. They say, for security purposes, we have sent you a new device. You must switch to the new device to stay safe. There's a manual inside your new box. You can read that to learn how to set up your new device. They've changed the device structure. We now guarantee this kind of breach will never happen again. And yeah, so they basically are hoping that some people will buy this and then will input their seed words and they'll be able to steal their funds. So anyways, be aware of this. If you have friends or family that maybe aren't up to snuff on this type of security, let them know that this could happen, especially if they purchase it themselves, then they might be getting something in the mail. So this sucks, man. I got to say, like, we got to do better with this kind of stuff. This is really bad for Ledger. People knew it was bad at the time. They kind of downplayed it. It's clear that this was a big fucking deal and we got to do better with our data. For yourself as an individual, if you're buying Bitcoin related stuff, it's advisable to use like a PO box, or use just an alternative address, like have it sent to your work instead of having sent it to your home. The little things like that can help a lot in the future. Oh God. Let's touch on this. I know this is a long one, guys. It's been almost 45 minutes, but I got to touch on this. Robert Breedlove. If you haven't been paying attention to the saga, right after Bitcoin 2021 in Miami, he tweeted out asking about BitClout, which is just like they'll upload your Twitter profile to this kind of scammy website that then values a token specifically assigned to your name and profile, and people can like buy your coin if they value you, and then you can dump your coin onto the market because you'll automatically be assigned a certain number of coins. They tried to get people interested by basically taking their likenesses and getting it on this website. You can request to have it removed. But he tweeted about this. By the way, if you put Bitcoin into BitClout, you cannot get it out once you put it in, just so you know. Anyways, he tweeted about BitClout. People were like, dude, what are you doing? It's a shitty, scammy token. You don't need to dive any further. Even if you're curious, like, here's all of the research people have done on this. It looks shady and crappy, and there's no point working on diving in further. And people tried to be like, listen, man, don't trust me. And Robert Breedlove himself has been very vocal and said like, hey, don't go down the shitcoin rabbit hole to a number of people saying like, listen, Bitcoiners have your best interest in mind. They're just trying to help you avoid the shitcoin rabbit hole and the pain that it involves. And a lot of people said, hey man, you're going to give people the wrong idea. They're going to dive down this rabbit hole. They're going to think that you are promoting this or legitimizing it in some way, shape, or form. And they're going to get hurt because of this. Even if in your mind, you think it's harmless, people are going to see this and they're going to start believing in the platform. So he continued to kind of tweet about it, and people, in my opinion, rightfully so, kept on saying, what the fuck are you doing? This is not a legitimate project. You know, it's trash of all things. Why are you pursuing this? And then obviously people started making memes the more he continued to pursue it. And he seemed a little bit defensive. Anyways, he dropped. In the end, what happened is after activating his account via Twitter and looking into it, he ended up selling all of his tokens for I don't know how many thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. So, and there were even screenshots of tweets of people being like, I'm buying Breedlove token just in case he likes the platform. I want to hold this token in case it goes up. There's one guy in particular that got absolutely destroyed holding it. And yeah, so he dumped all these tokens. In this blog post, he did say that he dumped the tokens likely into the hands of other people that thought that they would have value. He deemed that they did not. And then he did donate the proceeds from that to Bitcoin Core development. But I will say in the process, people still got hurt. So it's while the proceeds of the scam token still ended up in what's a worthy cause in Bitcoin Core development, the people that were holding the token that, you know, basically followed his lead into BitClout, even if he didn't intend it to go that way, they were left holding this token that dropped substantially in value after he dumped all of his on the market. And so they basically unwittingly donated to Bitcoin Core. Maybe they didn't want to donate to Bitcoin Core, but they did through proxy because he dumped the token and the value of their tokens went down. And I don't know. I'm curious if he had the intention of donating any of this to Bitcoin Core previously, or if this was like an afterthought after all of the pushback. After that, he then dropped this very lengthy blog post basically talking about his experience. It's very, very long. His experience in and around the pushback of everybody, but most of it amounts to what he previously stated as kind of like an immune system response to negative stimuli, aka scams and shitcoins. In the case of that negative response to him, he said it was too toxic, is effectively the TLDR on this blog post. I don't know, guys. Like, I don't buy it. I think it's fucking bullshit. This whole thing, watching this play out, he's put out some fantastic content. And I've got to say that this one hurt. This one sucked. Watching this play out was probably one of the most, if not the most disappointing thing of the entire year. You know, like, fuck Elon, whatever. But like, Breedlove was solid in his explanation of Bitcoin and its benefits. And I feel like this whole thing just cast a massive shadow on all of his previous work. And I know that we're all good at taking value from the ideas and separating them from the person. It's just unfortunate that we have to do this again in this instance. You know, like Nassim Taleb with his Bitcoin derangement syndrome had some good ideas in and around skin in the game and being anti-fragile. But when faced with something that didn't fully line up with the way he expected it to be, he flew off the rails, but I'm able to separate some of his ideas from him, the person. He just couldn't stand up to his own ideals. This one sucks though, because like, you know, even with Trace Mayer, you're like, well, you know, he did some weird things in the past. He pumped some other, you know, shit coins previously. And then he kind of went down like the Bitcoin only route. And then he gets caught like on like under the table trying to pump scammy shit to other people. And then he got called out on it. And that one sucked because he was a great voice, but it wasn't fully unexpected. This was unexpected. This I didn't. Ed, you told me like 4 months ago that Breedlove was gonna go down the route of not even like explicitly endorsing, but like, you know what's gonna happen when you say, oh, I'm curious about this. This is the first time I'm looking at something not Bitcoin and curious if there's some. Of course, people are gonna look at that and say, oh, well, if he's interested in it, there must be something. Meanwhile, everybody in the comments is saying, listen, look at all of these examples of why it's a terrible project. And then in the end, of course, he came to the conclusion it's a terrible project and dumped his tokens on unsuspecting people that weren't yet on that level of thinking about it, which again calls into question whether or not he ever really fully entertained the idea that it was legitimate. It just fucking sucks, man. I just we're gonna have to do this time and time again. This was just one of the less enjoyable ones. Anyways, let's end on a lighter note. This one had me giggling. I tweeted out the other day, can someone just create a bot that copies every tweet from Peter Schiff, but with alternating caps lock? And then today, to my surprise, on my feed, I finished my second Twitter bot last night. Its purpose is to crawl Peter Schiff tweets and to repost them using alternating text. If you like, check out Alternate Peter. And there's now a Twitter profile called Alternative Peter, where you can follow him. It's his exact tweets, but with alternating caps locks. So it's said like condescending SpongeBob. This is why I come to the internet, guys. Anyways, I'd say just follow that account. Don't even follow Peter Schiff. Follow Alternate Peter. And you can get all of the stuff he says about Bitcoin, but said in like a voice. And I think that's way better. It's accurately reflects what I think of a lot of things he tweets. So I think that's so funny. Hats off to California HODL for creating this bot. You made my feed. Thank you very much. Guys, I'm going to wrap it there. This was a lengthy one. Holy crap. 52 minutes, 53 minutes. Anyways, thank you all for joining me. There's well over 200 people here. Be sure to smash that like button. Give this a share. Subscribe if you're not already. If you want to help with the show in another way, you can hit up the sponsors I mentioned in the links down below. Ledin, Keystone, BitBuy, BitRefill, and Bill Foddle over at Privacy Pros. And if you really loved what you saw, you can always drop me a Bitcoin Lightning Network tip at my Strike page. That is strike.me/BTC sessions. If you haven't seen my video tutorial for Strike, I dropped it on Monday. Dude, this thing's awesome. And I can only imagine how much it's going to help the people of El Salvador down there. Jack Mallers is doing excellent work. If you didn't see the clip of him today from Fox Business, where he just destroys the anchor for saying that it's a threat to the people of El Salvador, you got to see it. It's excellent. Anyways, guys, I'm going to leave it there. Feel free to check out any of that. Links are below. And with that, I am out. Have yourselves a wonderful day or evening wherever you may be. I will see you guys next time. Oh, wait. Tomorrow, I got to bring it up right now. Tomorrow, I've got a killer panel coming up. Where is it? Why are we bullish? Tomorrow. At 6 p.m. Eastern time, Max Kaiser, Stacy Herbert, Dennis Porter, and we got Dread. It's going to be great. It's going to be a good time. So set that reminder. You can head over to my page. You can set the reminder. And I will see you tomorrow for Why Are We Bullish? Everybody, have a great night. I'm Ben with the BTC Sessions, and this has been your daily session.
Bitcoin.